Steve Zada from Boulevard Brutal, and today I have the privilege to talk with Morian from No Euclid, who just released one of the best metal record of the year so far called Metatheosis. Morian, welcome to Boulevard Brutal. I know it's kind of late at night for you in Germany, so thanks for sharing some time with us. It's much appreciated.
Oh, it's a great, great pleasure, and I'm always awake at this hour, so it's all right.
First and foremost, I want to congratulate you for the new record. And as I said in my review, the album is just fantastic. Nothing sounds like No Euclid. I mean, what inspires you to write such great music?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the kind words, and I'm very happy to see other people being able to appreciate what we did basically for ourselves, you know. And the thing is, I'm in daily life, I'm a classical composer.
Okay.
I studied composition, and I write contemporary music. So I write for the classical instruments and all kind of other stuff. And the fact that, Non-Euclid sounds maybe different, I think has to do with that fact that I am very used to writing different kinds of harmonies, of putting different rhythms on top of each other, and just basically trying different things. It's just that in Non-Euclid, I do it with metal, or we do it with metal, because, I mean, the others also contribute. But there are things like polyphony, meaning that every instrument plays something else than the other instruments, which we take to new places, I hope, where you know you have like a three-dimensional thing going on, like a thing of depth with different layers, and each of us has another layer or maybe another rhythm, or we try to change colors and elements as much as we can within the idiom of metal. So that's the only rule, let's say, or kind of rule, that it stays metal. And because it's metal and all the elements, you know, we are not using anything that out of the ordinary. It's maybe more the way that we use it, or the how far we go in it. Everything is actually metal. That's why I felt this is not so special. You know, it's not, we didn't start this band thinking like we would be totally different to everybody else. We just wanted to do metal, and this is the way it came out. I think just because of our other influences and what we have done, and our musical taste and spirit of exploration, let's say.
And as for the metal influences, I've noticed some references to King Crimson, Voivod, Celtic Frost. Am I right when I say that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, King Crimson, I have to admit, I know very little of them.
Okay.
Although people always tell me, they always compare my stuff to King Crimson, and what I've heard, I love. It's just I have never really sat down and done much with that. But V. Centura, for example, the guitarist, and who is also in Dark Fortress and in Triptychon,
yes,
he's a huge King Crimson fan, and he played with Celtic Frost as well. And the song he contributed, "The Black Plague of the Soul," that is, he wrote that song after I think his first tour with Celtic Frost, so it was very fresh, and for a guy from our little town to be playing in such a band, which very much like Voivod was one of the landmark inventors in the 80s of a lot of things in metal, and especially of the more, you know, sophisticated side, and also dark and crazy side. That, of course, left a big impression, so you can hear in that song that, well, he learned that shit from the master himself, you know. And what was the third? Well, Voivod has always been extremely important for me and one of my biggest influences since I was a very young teenager. And, you know, it was like right after Slayer came Voivod.
Okay.
And they have never left me, and it's one of the few bands that I still listen to on a daily basis. They have been instrumental in my whole development in music, so I owe them a great debt of gratitude.
Okay, and why did it take so long, 8 years, before releasing a second album?
Well, we have a very strange way of how things happen to us. Because, I mean, this album was recorded in 2007, and it's coming out now in 2014.
Okay.
The first album was from 2004. That was the first thing we did as a band. We met and made an album. But that album also took, I think, 4 years before it was released, because labels didn't exactly respond to our, you know, to our CD, and when we sent it around, like around the whole world, like also a lot of people that said that they're interested, but at the end it always fell through, because back then people said, like, well, we don't know what this is. Is this thrash, or is this death, or is this black? Or, you know, we got very kind of disappointing response from the metal world. I was a bit shocked, honestly, because, as I said, I didn't find it that extreme or no. That, you know, crazy or whatever. I mean, we just wrote a bunch of songs, basically. And it's so funny to see that now, all these years later, we get, you know, great reviews and people are really responding to it, and nobody's saying anymore about what genre it belongs to, because maybe the metal world has been saturated enough that people appreciate an individual sound again. Maybe that could be. But back then, that was not what people wanted to hear. I don't know. Now, I mean, we were always a death metal band, and now they say it's thrash, and it's viewed, I don't know, some people wrote that it's within the thrash revival, it's something unique. And we're like, oh, okay, so.
Well, it is indeed. It is. It's far different from, let's say, Havoc or bands like that.
Yeah, but yeah, as I mean, we like thrash and death and black and all kinds of other things as well. So it's just hard not to use this, you know. It's hard to stick to one very, very limited, small segment of everything that is possible.
Okay.
Well, so that's where it comes from.
So now you're the lead singer officially for the band. But on the record, it was some guy named Bruce.
Yeah.
And as I said in my review, who the fuck is Bruce? And why did he leave the band? Like, what happened?
Well, Bruce is one of my oldest friends. Because we're all from kind of the same town in the south of Germany. And he was one of the guys that I started making music with. We had each our band, but we were in the same rehearsal room, and we were always metal brothers, let's say. And how Non-Euclid was founded was because him and me and Santura and Seraph, we used to get together with a bunch of other people and play covers at Christmas, because Christmas is the time when everybody goes to see their family, and then all the boys are back in town, and, you know, we just play the songs that we like. So we were standing there, and we had so much fun playing, like, Emperor, Slayer, Morbid Angel, Voivod, I mean, tons of stuff, that we thought we should do more with this. You know, why don't we make a band? Because this is too good to just do covers with. And that's how the band was born. So, as I also mentioned before, with the idea just to have a metal band. And then I wrote some songs, and we got some lyrics, and recorded, and, you know, everything normal. But then happened this thing that, yeah, in the metal world, nobody really cared too much about it. I mean, a couple of people, but not really, like, on any significant level. But from the contemporary music world, we got a lot of very interesting offers. So we did projects together with symphonic orchestras, and we played on contemporary music festivals, and it was not many things, but it was a couple of, like, really big things. So the whole thing took a different direction, let's say. For some reason, those collaborations then became, at least as far as the live concerts were concerned, that was the thing that was happening, and where from one thing came another, and then a tour, even with the orchestra on a ship, and, you know, crazy stuff, actually. But Bruce, he was not, I mean, he's not a classical musician, or, you know, like, he's a very decent singer, but he was into the thrash part or into the metal part, and he didn't want to have to read music and count 13 against this, against that. And the more complicated the music became, and the more stressy the gigs became, because if you have 80 people behind you and you have one shot and one, you know, concert only to show your most complicated ideas of the stupid guy next to you, it became more stress for him than actually pleasure. And you could say, like, because musically it really went into a different direction, that he reached a point where he said, yeah, it's not his thing so much anymore. And we separated in all friendship. And he left the band 3 years after we recorded the album. But, well, now the new album comes out, and it was announced that I'm doing the vocals. As everybody now is confused about who is what, but that's how it goes. It's a little bit of a mess always.
Okay, and do you have any plans to bring the band on stage? Are you? Do you have any plans to play live or touring? Or
not really at this point, honestly, because the problem is that we are struggling with all our other bands. So for Santura, it's Triptychon. For Seraph, it's Revamp, and Tulkandra, and for Linus, it's Obscura, and well, we all have other things on the side, and you know, also things for, you know, to make a living and stuff. That even for those bands, also Dark Fortress is struggling a lot to find any time to tour, because all the people are always busy with 1,000 other things, and all the metal has to happen besides your day job or your other way of income, because none of these bands, even all these metal bands together, if you're in three of them, you can still not make a living of that. So the scheduling is a permanent nightmare, and there's a hierarchy also. Like, you know, the bigger band, of course, you know, the singer of Revamp is now the singer for Nightwish, Flor Jansen. So, you know, Nightwish say we're going to be on tour for a year, so that year Revamp doesn't do anything.
Exactly.
That creates time for Seraph to play with Dark Fortress, but if Dark Fortress play, Non-Euclid has no time. So what we decided to do is that we will focus on special projects, because that's what we all still want to do, you know, all the four guys that are in the band. And every once in a while from different sides come offers. So, you know, but then we take it as a project. We say, like, okay, it's going to be one event with a particular unique program happening. And then we focus on another thing, because we also still have to release all this orchestral music on CD, which will be the next CD. And hopefully that next CD will come soon after this one, because, yeah, the music is written and we have a lot of recordings already, and wow, we can basically keep that going. But it's going to be a little bit two different things. And I don't think we'll ever have time enough left to do a little club tour or something, as much fun as it would be, you know. But we've made several attempts in the past, and it just really... it never really worked out because we're a bit too obscure.
But at least we're not going to have to wait 8 years again to get a new record, right?
Oh, man. I really fucking hope so, because, you know, I had almost forgotten about that thing, because for a couple of years, you know, we really believed in it, and we were proud of it, man. And we worked hard on this thing, and then to see it just completely... you know, fizzle out into nothingness was kind of depressive. And then, yeah, the other bands took over. So it's so long ago, you know, that the some of the songs on that record are from 2005.
Holy.
Actually, Paranoid Alkaloid and To the Zombie Boars is, like, yeah, shortly after the first album, you know.
Okay.
So right now when I hear it, it's funny, because it's almost like it was in another life or something. And I can hear it again with fresh ears and actually really enjoy it.
And well, the album has been released on CD now, but there was also a digital version that was able on that was available on the pre-order as a Name Your Price campaign. Was the idea profitable for you guys?
Honestly, I have no idea. I know that it did caused some attention because it did really well on Bandcamp. It was on third place, I think, of sales when the pre-order started on the whole Bandcamp thing. So I think it did help to raise awareness and to make it very easy for people to have this thing. And it's been sitting on my hard drive for 7 years, so I'm just so relieved that finally people can hear this thing. You know, I mean, of course, I would like to make my money back at some point, but it's a secondary concern because people have been asking about it, and I always have to say, like, yeah, we're still trying to whatever get it released, and then we kind of forgot about it and did all this other stuff and the live things, you know, the orchestra things, because they took a lot of work and effort, of course. So we had given up hope that this album would ever come out.
Okay.
And then Blood Music sent us some message, and here it is. And I have to thank these guys for bringing this finally out.
And speaking of record companies and money, what do you think of the music industry these days?
Oh, man. That's a deep question. Well, it's going through a radical change, and we all have to see what works in the future. I mean, one thing is for sure, that it can't stay the same. I heard that LP sales are expected to exceed CD sales this year again.
It's possible, yeah.
Which is kind of cool. But yeah, I don't think that anybody has already the right model for how it should work, because we can't keep it as it was, but we can't keep it as it is right now either, because yeah, like this. The people who are making the stuff are just fucked on all sides, basically, because we don't get anything from anybody anymore. And that inevitably will lead to a decline in quality. So, yeah, if there can be a way maybe that indeed music is available to everybody, you know, that it is pronounced public property, because I like that I can go on YouTube and can listen to any song that I want. You know, it's fantastic because... yeah, it has a lot of good sides, and I think it would be wrong to turn that back, because it's a beautiful thing. But we have to find a way to compensate the people that are making this. Just like you can't make movies without the people that are making it getting paid, you know, because you can't put 6 months of your time into something if nobody pays the bills, because none of us have money laying around, you know.
Yeah, so, you still have to keep a day job, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I mean, I write music for a living, and I'm working around the clock all the time. I'm going fucking nuts, and everybody else with me. Yeah, everybody is just doing, really working overtime every day to get by. So it would be nice if there was something between the pirates and the the technophobes, something that we can all kind of benefit from. I hope for that.
Well, the sales of LPs going up, I mean, it's a good sign, because personally, that's all I purchase. I don't buy any CDs anymore. It's either digital or on vinyl, so maybe that's a good sign that people will once again get used to buy records, you know?
Yeah, well, I have to say, I'm old school in that sense, because I want to have something in my hand. I grew up kind of really worshipping albums and you know, kneeling in front of the record player for years and just spending all my time listening to music, and then since then spending all my time playing music. So if you have this beautiful thing in your hand, which I had with my own album now, finally, it's not the same as MP3s, you know. It's you can't compare the experience, and even the sound is shit and whatever. But I like CDs also, because I do like also clean, you know, sound. I like the idea of having something that I can take in my hand and look at. And as long as that stays, whatever form it takes, I think I'll be happy with it.
Okay, and let. Talking about new records, you have a new one coming out in September with Dark Fortress.
That's right.
And it's going to be called Venereal Dawn.
Venereal Dawn, right.
And what can we expect from that record?
Well, you can expect a record that is very Dark Fortress. The people that know us well will know where everything came from. But at the same time, it's also always that we try to make every album different, so that every album has its own meaning and its own place and its own sound and style and stuff. And, well, we did that again. The songs are rather long because, I mean, we always had long songs, and at some point we wanted to, you know, try and make them short and compact, but it completely backfired, so they're longer than ever. And everything is very epic. And we think a good mix of brutal parts and beautiful parts. So there's a lot of black metal in there, but there's mainly a lot of Dark Fortress in there. And I'm afraid I can't give away more at this point.
I just can't wait to listen to it.
Well, we worked extremely hard on it, and we're very happy with it. So we can't wait to finally show it. But, well, there's a date now to do that.
And you were talking about black metal. Do you think that black metal in general is still relevant today as opposed to when you first started your career with Dark Fortress?
Well, I wasn't there when Dark Fortress started, so it would be more a question for the founders of the band.
You joined the band in 2008, right?
2007.
Okay.
Yeah, but they've been around since 94.
So. Exactly, the 20th anniversary this year.
Yeah, so, I mean, for sure, it's not the same thing as even in 2007, so, yeah, much more, with much, much less, like, in 94. I don't know, you know, it's hard to say, because the retro forces are strong in every genre in metal. Like the conservative forces that say kind of, no, this is what power metal should sound like and what thrash metal should sound like and death metal. I mean, despite everything, isn't the best death metal the first demo of the first bands? You know, there is that which has been very strong in the last 20 years in metal. Let's face it, the bands that really came up with new stuff that was also appreciated, there were very few. And in black metal, it was kind of the same. You know, it's a lot of the same stuff around, and a lot of conventions and conforming to what some dude once did, you know, 20 years ago. And that, for me, is not the essence of what it's about. But hey, who cares? I mean, I don't even care what you call it, you know, because I know some bands that are not even called black metal, but that are way more evil than, you know, almost any black metal band out there and stuff. So the whole this genre of fiddling bullshit is I can only say that I like the interesting bands in many genres, and in black metal there is a couple of bands that I find very inventive and really good, like Dodecahedron, for example, from Holland. I don't know if you've heard them.
Not yet. I just know by the name.
I'm sending you the link. I think it's this one.
Okay.
Well, I'll find it for you. But this is one black metal band that I think is doing something really, really, really cool.
Okay.
Wait, I look for their website.
I'll check that out.
Sorry, man. here it is. Sorry. That was wrong. I forget that.
I'll share the link with my readers as well. All right, I'll check that out.
But I also liked, for example, I don't know if you know the I think the last Mayhem album, I don't know if they have a new one, but Ordo Ad Cao.
Yeah.
This extreme record. I mean, you can discuss if it's music or not, but it was very inventive. You know, it was really creative and at the same time really dark and unique. And I like when people do that because, you know, black metal gives you the opportunity to be extreme and to be really ugly and to create. You have in that direction a liberty that you hardly have anywhere else. You
know? Yep.
So I'm surprised if people don't do that, but just copy what everybody else is also doing. You know, that's the point where it stops being interesting for me. So I kind of filter the few things that I like, but I do that with everything anyway. So black metal is no different.
And other than black metal and metal in general, what are you listening to at home?
A lot of things. There's a lot of flamenco in my collection because I used to play this music for a long time.
Okay.
And I like, there's some great world music fusion kind of things out there. For example, a Norwegian trumpet player called Nils Petter Molvær, who has a bit of a Miles Davis sound, but has a band with him. And I think officially it's called jazz, but it's just amazing music. I'm a big fan of trip hop as well.
Okay.
Massive Attack and Portishead and the Bristol scene and that whole vibe, let's say. And of course, a lot of classical music and metal. Also, Morbid Angel always on the plate, and Opeth always on the plate. Meshuggah, Devin Townsend. Another Canadian hero.
Oh, yeah.
Fortunate enough to meet and work with.
Cool. On which record?
Those are the things.
Okay. Well, thanks again for your time, Maureen. Much appreciated. Any word for your Canadian fans here?
We, of course, are very proud that our music made it over to you guys, because we've been getting a lot of great music from Canada, great artists in Canada.
True.
I would love to go there, and hopefully the day will come that in one form or another we can play for you guys over there.
Maybe with Dark Fortress.
Well, we would love to, man. We're trying with every album, but we'll see. Hopefully this time something happens. So.
Yeah, it's the 20th anniversary, so you have to come here.
Yeah, so I think so too. So yeah, if you know of anybody who wants us over there, let them contact us. We'd be very, very happy to come.
We'll try. Well, thanks again for your time. Much appreciated. And have a great success with the new Dark Fortress record.
Okay, thanks, man.
Well, thank you.